Well, thank you very much. Good afternoon. It's a pleasure to be here today. I would like to thank the Australian Securitisation Forum for the invitation all up. Today, I will talk about the securitisation data set, which has detailed data on mortgages underlying securitisations. We have gained a lot of insights from these data, and I want to share these with you today. We found this data particularly useful in three areas. First, to assess the risks on the Reserve Bank's balance sheets. Second, to assess trends in the characteristics and quality of housing lending. And third, to assess the competitive environment in the mortgage market. But before I get to the insights, let me first tell you why we collect these data. The Reserve Bank accepts certain asset-backed securities as eligible collateral in its domestic market operations. Unlike other types of securities that are eligible collateral, such as bonds issued by the Australian government or by banks, asset-backed securities are inherently more complex. So investors require more information to assess the credit risk of these securities. Since mid-2015, we have required that in order to be eligible as collateral for the transactions with the Reserve Bank, detailed information about the assets underlying the security and its structural features be made available to us and more broadly to permitted data users. The Australian Securitisation Forum has been instrumental in helping us coordinate with the industry to collect these data, which we refer to as the securitisation data set. So what are these data? Well, most of these securities are backed by residential mortgages. The data set includes two types of residential mortgage-backed securities: marketed securities, which have been sold to external investors, and self-securitized deals. Self-securitizations are retained by the bank that created them, and they're used solely to access central bank liquidity. The Reserve Bank accepts self-securitized assets for this purpose for a number of reasons, most notably a shortage of securities considered to have sufficient credit quality and liquidity. However, the Reserve Bank accepts as eligible collateral only the highest credit quality asset-backed securities, those with a AAA rating or equivalent. The insights I will talk about today come from the loan-level data underlying these securities. Loans underlying securitizations are, of course, not necessarily representative of the entire mortgage market in all its dimensions. In particular, the choice of mortgages in the collateral pool may be influenced by the way credit rating agencies assign ratings, by investor preferences, and also by the Reserve Bank's repo eligibility framework. However, self-securitizations, which are the bulk of the data set, cover a significant share of all mortgages in Australia. For this reason, we would expect the mortgages underlying self-securitizations to be more representative of banks' balance sheets than those of marketed RMBS. Data are currently received each month by us with a one-month lag on 1.6 million individual mortgages with a total value of around $400 billion. This accounts for about one quarter of the total value of housing loans outstanding in Australia. Now, there are around 100 data fields collected for each mortgage. They cover a broad range of variables, including loan characteristics, borrower characteristics, and details on the collateral underpinning the mortgage. The securitization data set allows us, along with other investors in the asset-backed securities, to undertake a rich analysis of the securities they hold and more accurately assess the risk and the pricing than would be possible without this information. In our case, it allows us to undertake our own risk assessment and not be dependent on rating agencies. But the loan-level data also enable us to gain valuable insights into mortgages that are not readily available from other sources. And today, I want to share with you some of these insights. So, what do the data tell us about the loans underlying securitizations, and so about the risks faced by investors in these securities? Well, let's look at the average, at the current size of outstanding mortgages. The average loan size in the data set is $300,000. That ignores any funds held in offset balances. Mortgages underlying securitizations appear to be, on average, smaller than the population of all mortgages. Now, this graph here shows the distribution of loan sizes using a histogram. Each loan is weighted by its balance so that larger loans are given a larger weight, Weighting the distribution provides a more accurate reflection of potential exposures from a risk perspective. And so, as you can see, there is a wide range in the size of mortgages. By value, 7% of loans have a balance greater than $1 million. And let's look at owner-occupier and investor loans separately. The distribution of loan size is similar for the two groups, as you can see, but there is a greater proportion of larger investor loans. And I marked the median for you on the two, and you can see that the median for the investor loans, it's the lower panel, is a bit larger. So this could reflect the tax incentives for investors to take on and sustain more leverage than owner-occupiers, thereby maximising the amount of funds borrowed and limiting repayments. But it also reflects that investors appear to have a higher ability to pay off larger loans. For each mortgage in the data set, we also have information on the borrower, including their income. We found that borrowers with investor loans typically have higher incomes than those with owner-occupier loans, and so have a greater borrowing capacity. The loan-to-valuation ratio is an important indicator of the riskiness of a loan. So here we show the distribution for loan-to-valuation ratios based on the current loan balance and the most recent available property valuation. And I've restricted us for mortgages issued over the past 2 years. You can see here that there's a concentration of loans with LVRs between 70 to 80%. Around one-third of loans are in that group. But only a small share of loans have LVRs higher than that. Now, this reflects a few factors. Banks limit loans with LVRs above 80%. And these high LVR borrowers are typically required to pay for lenders' mortgage insurance. Also, credit rating agencies apply large penalty factors in their credit risk assessment of high LVR loans in a collateral pool. So it's not surprising that there are fewer high LVR loans in the securitization data set compared with a broader population of loans. Let's turn to investor and interest-only loans. These have received some attention from regulators in recent years. This has included measures by the Australian Prudential Regulation Authority to tighten lending standards on these type of loans. So this graph shows the share of investor and interest-only loans in the securitisation data set. Oops, sorry, this didn't go on, did it? Here we go. That's it. So it shows the share of investor and interest-only loans in the securitisation data set, and that is the purple for the marketed RMBS and the green for the self-securitizations. And that compares it with a measure from APRA that covers the broader housing loan market coming from the bank's balance sheet. Now, the first thing to note is that the marketed securities in purple have a lower share of investor and interest-only loans than the general population captured by the APRA data, that's the orange line. For self-securitizations, the dark green line, these shares are more closely aligned to the composition of the bank's total mortgage portfolio in orange. The second point of interest, as you might note, is the very recent large decline in interest-only shares in self-securitizations. You can see that on the end on the right-hand side panel. This is consistent with changes in the broader stock of outstanding mortgages, again, the orange line. These declines have occurred alongside measures by APRA to limit new interest-only lending. Oops, that wasn't meant to go. To summarise so far, we have looked at a number of characteristics of securitised mortgages that can be associated with the riskiness of these loans, in particular loan-to-valuation ratios and whether they are investor or interest-only loans. Two things stand out. First, there is a wide distribution of these characteristics across different loans. And second, on average, securitised loans appear to be no riskier than the broader population of mortgages, at least when looking at these metrics. Variation in interest rates across loans is an important way for lenders to account for the different risk of mortgages. More creditworthy borrowers or lower-risk mortgages are typically offered lower interest rates, while borrowers with higher-risk mortgages would expect to pay higher interest rates. interest rates on mortgages may also be influenced by other factors, such as competition between lenders, bank funding costs, the regulatory environment, and policy settings. There are different types of measures readily available when assessing mortgage interest rates, such as standard variable rates or package rates. They're typically advertised on websites. However, these measures do not necessarily reflect interest rates actually paid, since banks typically apply unadvertised discounts. Some of the variation rates actually paid reflects variation creditworthiness across borrowers. Now, the securitization data set includes the actual interest rate paid on each mortgage, and so can provide both timely and granular insights into housing interest rates that are not available from many other sources. The next graph shows the distribution of interest rates paid on variable rate mortgages across different lenders. The major banks in the top panel offer a wide range of interest rates, but the distribution is comparable to smaller banks, which you see in the middle panel. There's an even wider range of interest rates offered by non-bank lenders, that's your bottom panel. The wide range, to a large extent, reflects that this category, so the non-bank lenders, covers a variety of lenders targeting different types of borrowers and different types of mortgages. There are some non-bank lenders that offer products with a similar level of interest rates to the banks. But there are other non-bank lenders who specialize in providing riskier mortgages, for example, to borrowers that require alternative or low documentation loans or have impaired credit histories. The most common mortgages in the Australian housing market are owner-occupier loans with principal and interest repayments. So let's look at the distribution of interest rates paid for this type of loan in more detail. We focus on the loans of the major banks in this one here. I will mark on the graph three other interest measures. Now, the first line marked here in purple is the relevant standard variable rate. As you can see, very few borrowers actually pay the standard variable rate or a higher interest rate. Rather, borrowers are generally offered a discount relative to this reference rate. The discount offered vary by borrower and lender, and they also vary over time. The second interest rate, indicated in orange, is the average package rate. A typical package mortgage product has additional features beyond the basic mortgage, such as an offset account, and may be bundled with other products, such as a credit card. Packages often include advertised discounts. A large share of loans, as you can see, are consistent, have an interest rate that is consistent with the average package rate. However, the majority of loans have an interest rate below that average package rate, so below the orange line. The third interest rate is the advertised specials rate. Only a small share of loans in the data set has an interest rate consistent with its lowest advertised rate. This may be because not many borrowers either qualify or seek loans at the advertised specials rate. Another reason is that advertised specials are interest rates on new loans, and new loans have attracted in recent years larger discounts compared with existing loans, as I will discuss later. For the major banks, the interest rates on most loans are within the range set by the advertised special rates in yellow and the package rate in orange. Preliminary econometric analysis suggests that loan-to-valuation ratios and loan size are important determinants of the discount offered to borrowers. Large loans typically have lower interest rates. One factor is that the loan size a borrower qualifies for is correlated with the borrower's net income, which in turn is correlated with a better ability to repay. Also, borrowers seeking larger loans may have more bargaining power to negotiate greater discounts given the fixed costs associated with issuing housing loans. Now, the data shown in the distributions can be aggregated to provide a measure for the average outstanding interest rate on existing loans. You may have seen similar graphs to this one in some of our recent publications. The data underlying those graphs are from the securitization data set. The outstanding interest rates on the four main types of mortgages have changed over the past years, partly in response to regulatory measures. These changes are also evident in the variable interest rate loans in the securitisation dataset. For example, in the latter part of 2015, investor loans, which are on the right-hand side panel, became more expensive compared with owner-occupier loans. This was in response to regulatory measures designed to limit the pace of growth of investor credit. And over the past year, regulatory measures have focused on limiting new interest-only lending. In response, lenders have increased rates on interest-only loans several times. These are the orange lines in both panels, while lowering rates on principal and interest loans. That's the blue lines. The response of the banks to the regulatory changes can also be measured by examining how the distribution of interest rates has changed. Here, you can see a stacked histogram. For each interest rate band on the horizontal axis, it shows the share of loans that have either principal and interest repayments in the blue bars or that have interest-only repayments in the orange bars. Now, this is from October 2016, and you can see the large overlap between the two distributions for interest-only and for principal and interest loans before the introduction of limits on new interest-only lending. Now, there has since been a market repricing of loans within those two groups in response to the regulatory measures. You can now see a clear separation between the distributions. Interest rates on interest-only loans have increased, and the distribution, which is the orange one, has shifted towards the right, following the large increases in for both owner-occupier and investor loans in that category. Mortgages with an interest rate below 4% are now almost exclusively principal and interest loans, whereas they weren't before. The distribution of principal and interest loans in blue has also changed following the regulatory measures. There's now a greater proportion of principal interest loans with an interest rate below 4% due to the lower rates applied to owner-occupier loans, and there has reportedly been increased competition for this type of loans. So far, we have looked at interest rates on all outstanding loans. As indicated earlier, another important measure is the interest rate for newer loans. While changes to standard variable rates or reference rates are directly transmitted to all borrowers with variable rate loans, interest rates offered to new borrowers may move independently of reference rates, depending on lenders' discounting decisions. I will show you now estimates from the securitisation dataset for the interest rate on recently issued mortgages. As you can see, interest rates on new loans, that is the green line, have been consistently lower than the interest rate on outstanding mortgages over the past few years. That is the blue line, the outstanding one. And in fact, over the past 12 months, the degree of discounting has increased, so the gap has gotten a bit larger. This has been the case for both owner-occupier and investor loans. The increase in interest rate discounts offered to new borrowers over the past year suggests that competition for customers is stronger for new borrowers than for existing borrowers. The Reserve Bank has noted the apparent difference in competition for new and existing borrowers in its recent submission to the Productivity Commission's inquiry into competition in the financial system. In this second part of my talk, I've highlighted three insights that we have gained from the data set on mortgage interest rates actually paid by different borrowers and how they vary over time. First, as is the case with the size and loan-to-valuation ratios of mortgages, there's a wide distribution of interest rates paid across different types of mortgages and borrowers. Second, in response to recent regulatory measures, these distributions have changed. And third, we found that advertised and unadvertised discounts to reference rates are commonplace. These discounts have increased in recent years, such that new borrowers often pay lower interest rates than existing borrowers for similar types of mortgages. So I've shared with you today some of the mortgage insights that we have been able to gain from the securitisation data set. We have found this data set to be a rich source of detailed information that can help us to better understand broader developments in the mortgage market. One area is in assessing trends in the characteristics and quality of housing loans that require loan-level data. Another area where this data are valuable is in assessing the competitive environment in the mortgage market. The primary purpose of this data to us is, of course, our need to be able to assess risks on the Reserve Bank's balance sheet. The granular data in the data set allows us to thoroughly assess the credit quality of the asset-backed securities accepted as collateral in our domestic market operations. I look forward to sharing some of the work we're doing in that area at a future occasion. Thank you.
Marion, we have some questions that have come in from the audience, if you have a few minutes. Yep. First one should be a reasonably quick answer. How many users of the data are there other than the RBA?
That is a question which I cannot answer. I'm not sure whether the ASF knows, but they provide the access for other users. Now, we have access to different data than what is broadly available. So there's some parts of the data. There's privacy concerns, the self-securitizations as well. We're the only user. We're the only one who are accepting as collateral. The issuers have been asked to provide statistics on those, but I can't actually tell you how many users there are. I'm not the right person to ask. I don't own the data. So.
Okay, fair enough. Next question. The last graph you showed showed new borrowers paying lower interest rates than existing ones, and you mentioned there's different competition for those two segments of the market. What measures could help improve this lack of competition, presumably, in the existing borrower space?
Trying to go back. No, it's been switched off. I wanted to take you back. So this is the last graph, which shows the large gap in there. So there's a discount. That does point to different competition. It's not a recent feature. Competition in any market, including financial markets, is a complex issue. A number of agencies have been tasked to look at that. And most recently, the Productivity Commission has been asked to conduct an inquiry into competition in the financial system. They have asked for submissions, which I believe are publicly available. Ours certainly is. So one barrier to competition amongst many, and the one which we have often pointed out, is lack of transparency or the availability of information. So, for example, in the example here, borrowers could refinance if they knew where they can get the lower interest rates and just change their loan. So the RBA has highlighted more transparency as one of the steps that could be taken in that space, and availability of data, in our view, is an important ingredient to transparency. So the example here is the securitization data has allowed us insights into the structure of mortgage interest rates that we didn't have before.
Okay, next audience question. There are a few coming through now. What trends are you seeing in delinquency and hardship?
So I think I have to pass on that one because that is a question for the financial stability area. I don't tend to focus on these. If you want to know what we know, the Financial Stability Review is a great publication on that. The securitization data set is also not necessarily the best one to look at that. As we know, you know, there are certain conditions to securitize a loan. So it's, I guess, short of having the population, it's been unclear whether it's representative in that respect or not.
Oh, that links quite well to the next question then. Does the much lower rate of investor and interest-only loans in marketed RMBS imply banks' balance sheets carry a materially weaker credit quality than the securitization product they place in capital markets?
I think that is for the relevant banks to argue. Of course, the loan itself isn't the risk of the security. You got tranching happening, you got subordination happening. So, you know, we have some of those on the books. We take only the AAA tranche. So I think it is it's probably for each individual investor to decide which part they take. So I would say I can't really speak to that because I don't think the two things are comparable.
Okay, a question on the comparison between principal repayment in interest only versus principal and interest loans. Asking, does the data set show that the amount of principal paid off over five-year terms roughly is roughly the same between interest-only and principal and interest loans. The suggestion being made is that interest-only borrowers are simply paying it off in less frequent but larger chunks rather than in contracted fortnightly payments.
That's a very good question. Thank you for the research agenda. I'll be going back and looking into that. So we haven't looked at this specific question. I think one of the issues is also we have only 2 years of data so far, so that stretches you that far. There's a little bit of historic data coming in. So I haven't looked at that specific question, but watch the space.
You can give us the answer there when you come back next year, I hope.
We'll see. If I like it.
Okay, maybe just time for one more. Sorry, I'm just trying to read this question that's just come in. How does the RBA treat balances in offset accounts when analysing LVRs?
So in this specific exercise, we have excluded the balances in offset accounts because they can be redrawn. So it's a question, you know, how sustainable any position is. There are probably valuable exercises where you want to include them. I know that there's a couple of buffer graphs floating around in our financial stability areas which come from that data set. So we're looking at that for different questions. But for the loan-to-valuation ratio here, we have actually excluded them.
Yeah. Okay, thanks, Marion. There are a couple of questions we might not have time to get to. Hopefully people will follow up with you on email if they want something else.
Absolutely, absolutely. And there's Cecile here who I'm sure will also point you to the right person to answer the questions.